Coming to you across the ether at the speed of light, it's the Mortgage Moment with Mark Wells and Kerry Deese of Preferred Financial. Join us for the next hour as we take a look at the ins and outs of construction financing, renovation and addition financing in the mortgage world. Well, Kerry, we've got a couple of various topics today, all revolving around construction type of loans, loans that people may need to repair their home, to renovate their home, to add on to their home, or to start from scratch and build a home from the ground up. We get a lot of questions about these, and the different projects really require different approaches. So we're going to start with the easy ones, and we're going to look first at repair and renovation financing. Now, Kerry, what makes the difference between a repair and a renovation?
Well, repairs are usually minor items, cosmetic things.
Yeah.
Painting, you need a new heating and air conditioning unit.
Yeah.
You need a new roof, stuff like that.
That's right. And generally, I mean, there's no set number on any of this. But if we're talking about doing work that's under $15,000 or $20,000, we're usually talking about repairs more than we are renovations. As the scope of work increases, what looks like repairs kind of becomes a renovation. A renovation is kind of, we would think, in terms more of an overall improvement of the overall condition of the home, top to bottom, including flooring, maybe appliances, things like that. Usually when we talk about renovation-type loans, we're looking at something between $20,000 and $40,000. You know, sometimes renovations can include taking a wall out to open up some space. But we don't include in these type of terms, repairs and renovations, what our third type of loan might be for a homeowner, and that is they want to put an addition on the house. So when we're doing an addition, Kerry, what are we doing to the house?
You're actually adding square footage to the home, and that can run, you know, in the hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, yeah, depending on how big the additions are. Anymore, it's hard to get even a single-room addition for under $50,000 to $70,000. So if you're doing a home addition, there may be some different kinds of financing that you need to put in place. So let's talk first about repairs. These are the smaller items. Could run anywhere from a single repair of a roof on up to multiple items that need to be repaired. And we find that these are best financed using a home equity line. Home equity lines have a couple of advantages. Kerry, let's go over what the advantages of using an equity line would be for these type repairs.
The closing costs are much lower, and sometimes you can get away with not having any closing costs at all.
Yeah, we have from time to time, many of the banks and lending institutions will have programs in which they will pay the closing costs for you to close the home equity line. So it's a much less expensive mortgage option, and especially easy to do when you're doing repairs. What other advantages do equity lines have?
They're super convenient. You can take the money out at any time, pay it back, and use it again as many times as you need to.
Yeah, that's right. The money is able to be used at your discretion. So in other words, if you're going to do a repair, the home equity line lender is not going to say, okay, well, as soon as you get these repairs done, call me, we'll release some money. The home equity line is set up. The money can be controlled and used at your discretion, so you can kind of maintain control of your repair project. What else have we got there on the good side of home equity lines?
They can offer interest-only financing for up to 10 years.
And we're going to see how that may also be a negative or a disadvantage, but it is an advantage. If you want to structure the payment on your equity line at just paying the interest and not amortizing it, some of the equity line lenders will let you do that for up to a 10-year period, before they then go into a mandatory repayment amortization. And also an advantage is that you can use with a home equity line, you can often use the existing value of the home as it sits, even in its unrepaired state, in order to access the funds that you need. And that can save you a lot of hassle and a lot of headaches. Now, there's some disadvantages to home equity lines. And when we say disadvantages, just things that you need to be aware of. Carrie, we talked about how an interest-only payment is an advantage, but how is it a disadvantage?
They don't actually make any impact on the principal of the loan. It doesn't pay the loan off.
And, like a lot of things, sometimes we take the path of least resistance, and we take out that home equity line, and we say, it's a little tight here getting everything done, and I'm putting out some money. I think I'll just make the interest-only payment for a few months. And then a few months turn into a few more months into a few years. And a lot of times people come in and say, I want to refinance my home equity line and get it where I have to pay it off, because it's just too easy sometimes to leave it open like that and pay the interest. So that can be a disadvantage. And the biggest disadvantage to a home equity line, Carrie, compared to standard financing is what?
Well, they're usually an arm, not an appendage.
That's right.
An adjustable rate mortgage, or variable rate, as it's sometimes called.
That's right. Home equity lines are never fixed rate products. They are adjustable rates. They adjust with prime rate. It's a little bit different from other loan indices, but they will change. Home equity lines over the past 6 months have risen in rate by 3/4 as the feds have increased the overnight funds rate and the prime rate that goes up with it. The interest that you're paying on your equity line can go up. Now, that's not something to just sit around and lose sleep over if you've got a small home equity line. For instance, if you had a $20,000 balance on your home equity line and the interest rates went up even 2 to 4%, now that would be huge. That's a huge rate increase over a short period of time. It would only affect your payment $15 or $20 a month. However, if your home equity line is larger, and then that can become a consideration. You may want to look at using the home equity line to get your improvements done and then rolling it into some permanent fixed rate financing when you finish the repairs. So as we've mentioned here, if you've got some small repair projects to do around your house, home equity line is an inexpensive, very efficient, easy way to get those repairs paid for. Now, when we get to renovations, we've got a couple of directions that you might have to go in order to get your renovations done. And again, it all depends on the scope of the projects you're doing, the size of them, not the physical size, but the monetary size. And a lot of which product you use will depend on how much equity is in your home right now. The ideal loan, Carrie, if we want to do a renovation loan, the ideal way and the cheapest way will be when all the stars align. What will those stars look like?
If the stars align, there's enough equity in the unrenovated home to go ahead and tap into that to get your home equity line of credit.
That makes life easy because you tap the funds before you ever start the project, before any work is done, and you just use the current home value and the current equity to tap out. Now, home equity lines, for many lenders, will tap out at about 85% of the value of your home. And when we say that, that means that the home equity line can be of an amount that when added to the current first mortgage value, the combination of the first mortgage and the equity line you're getting will not exceed 85% of the value. We do have some lenders who will go to 90%. Getting a home equity line above 90% in this day and time, I'm not aware of any lenders that are going above that. So if everything's great and your renovation costs are not going to exceed what is 90% of the value of your home, we just do an appraisal as is. We get you an equity line, and just like you did the repairs, you can do your renovations that way. Now, a renovation loan of this type is really, again, just a home equity line. The funds are available as you need them. You don't have to have any permission from the lender to get the funds. You set them up, you draw on it as you need it, and that can be a really easy way to do a home renovation. When we get back off the break, we'll talk about renovation loans where you don't have the value in your house as it is and the track we have to take to get those loans done. Join us after the break.
Welcome back. Thank you for joining us this morning. As always, if you have any questions, you can give us a call Monday through Friday at 864-235-9596. You can email us at themortgagemoment@gmail.com. And you can catch all of our shows at our website at preferredfinancialgreenville.com. And I want to give a shout out to Reza this morning. Thank you for making an appointment and coming in to see us this week.
Thanks, Reza. Enjoyed our meeting this week. And for our listeners here, when we were talking about repair, renovation, addition, construction financing, these are more complicated projects than just simple purchase loans or even refinance loans. And we are happy to just discuss your particular project. And some of the parameters we're laying down here this morning, they're not set in stone. Where a repair loan becomes a renovation loan, or where a renovation loan becomes, you know, a construction loan. I mean, all of those have very flexible parameters, and we can kind of help you identify the type of loan you will need. Now, if your renovation cost cannot be paid for by cashing out the existing equity in your home, then we have to use a different type of appraisal. And we had mentioned this type of appraisal in a previous show, but let's go over that again. Carrie, when we have costs that are going to exceed the current value of the home, how do we get those paid for in a renovation loan? What are we going to have to do with the appraisal?
Well, we've got to do an appraisal first that will give a base valuation, but it's going to be subject to completion based on those repairs.
That's right. So if you don't have enough equity in your home to cash out right now based on its current value and do your renovations, what you can do is have an appraiser. We make a list of all the things you're going to renovate, all the things you're going to change and do and upgrade. And then we have an appraiser come in and appraise the house as though those items were already done. Once he has established that value, there are lenders who will lend you money to do those renovations based on the future value of the home when you're finished. Now, the only drawback to that is there may be some strings attached to that type of renovation loan. The lender in that case may want to track your work, may want to release funds as the work is done, may not give you full discretion of the money. And again, it depends on the scope of the project and some of the work you're doing. But it can be a little more complicated, but that is how you can do renovations when the current value might not give you enough money to do it. Now, with renovation loans, because they're going to generally exceed the $20,000 number and probably and sometimes go up to $50,000. Normally what you want to do when the renovations are finished is roll everything back into a fully fixed rate amortizing loan. And we just handle that as a cash out loan that pays off the renovation loan, pays off your current first mortgage and rolls everything in. You know, if you're carrying a higher interest rate on your first mortgage anyway, maybe you pick up a little bit of lower interest rate on your first mortgage at the same time, the decision as to whether to roll a renovation loan into a fixed rate loan can have a lot to do with your personal comfort level of holding on to a larger variable rate loan that the equity line, the renovation loan would be, versus just tying it all into a fixed rate. All we have to do is run the numbers. You can look at the risk and how you evaluate the risk, and we can always put you back into fixed rates for everything if you need to. So we're going to move from repairs through renovations and now to additions, where, as Carrie mentioned, we're actually adding square footage to the existing home. Again, most of these projects are going to be in the excess of $50,000 to get done. Again, if you have the standing equity in your home, we can do an equity line for even a project as large as an addition. But that may be relatively uncommon. Probably more commonly, we are going to need to appraise this house, again, using a subject to appraisal. In other words, you say, okay, I'm going to add this bedroom to the house. I'm going to add this rec room to the house. You have an appraiser appraise it as though that work is already done. And then we use what amounts to a construction type of loan to do the addition. And there's kind of a fine line here also. At what point will a lender on an addition loan allow you to have full discretion over the use of the funds, or where will they control it? And let's talk a minute about why the lender would want to control the release of the funds for your addition or even your large renovation loan. Carrie, what is the lender trying to avoid when they put strings on how the money, when the money can be used?
Well, you have to watch out for overdraws by the builder, and they're really trying to keep control over that.
That's right. An overdraw just means the builder says, hey, I've finished this amount of work. I need $25,000. And in reality, the work that was done did not amount to $25,000.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, the builder has overdrawn. Now, a reputable builder will keep separate accounting for every job that he has. But unfortunately, the South Carolina laws do not require a builder to keep separate accounting. And so your $25,000 can go into his big pot of money, and all of a sudden he's using your money to fund somebody else's job. And then you'll find out that if you've overpaid a builder, he just doesn't have a lot of incentive to come back and finish up the project that he started. So lenders are very careful about the release of money when we have a significant renovation project or a large addition project, because they do not want the builder to overdraw. There's just no incentive for him to finish on time or to come back, and that money can go to do work on somebody else's project. And then it kind of can become a domino. At some point, if a builder shifts money from one project to another too many times or too often, he can get caught in a downturn, and all of a sudden he doesn't have the money to finish your project because he's overdrawn. Now, one practice that construction lenders use, and it would be wise for you to use it, even if you're not restrained by the lender, and that is you should never pay for materials up front unless these are special order items that cannot be returned to the original vendor for those things. So the reason that you don't want to pay for materials up front, you don't want to pay for those materials until they have been installed, is that those materials can get up and walk away from your job and walk over to somebody else's job in the middle of the night. And all of a sudden you've paid for lumber to frame up your addition, and you wake up 2 days later and you no longer have any lumber for your addition.
Does that mean there are dishonest people out there?
It does. I hate to be the one to break this news to you. Yes, there are. I call them lurkers. There are people who lurk just waiting for opportunities to walk off with materials and take them somewhere else. So do not pay for materials. Now, I think it's legitimate if you have a special order item. Now, special order items can be cabinets. You know, your kitchen is unique in many ways. And the cabinets that go in there, they're not going to fit in somebody else's house. So if a builder asks you for a deposit on the cabinets, that's legitimate. If you're putting in special order windows that happen to be a different size from standard size windows, that's another instance in which, you know, windows just going to be no good to anyone else, and it's legitimate to pay for those things up front. But other than special order materials, do not pay up front for upfront material. I'm also going to say never, and I mean never, pay for upfront work. If you pay a builder today to do your work tomorrow, I can almost promise you he will not be there tomorrow. The builder needs to stay a little bit hungry. He needs to have incentive to work in a timely manner. And if you pay him up front, you are going to totally lose control of the project. And I want to tell our listeners this. I'm not saying this to bash builders at all. I was a builder for 10 years. I worked under this system. I understood the system. And if you have a builder who is ethical and you have a builder who operates his business financially soundly, he will not have a problem with any of the things we're talking about. The only time we ever have problems are when builders will not start work without deposits for upfront work, and inevitably those projects go south. It's just something you don't want to do. So if you're going to control your own funds, if the bank gives you the ability to control your own funds in an addition or a large renovation project, just remember to use the same draw techniques that the banks use for construction lending. You pay them prearranged draws based on work that has been completed. Now, Carrie, if the standing equity is not sufficient to just do a simple home equity line for an addition, what are we going to have to turn to do an addition financing?
we'll have to do a construction type loan instead of an equity line loan and then appraise it according to its future value.
That's, again, what we've mentioned is a subject to appraisal. Appraiser will come out and appraise the house as though that addition is done. And based on that value, the lender will lend you the money to do the addition if it falls within the loan-to-value guidelines. Typically, under a construction type of loan, your funds will be released to you on a monthly draw, as we mentioned before, based on work completed. And the lender will often require an inspection at each draw. They will come out and actually physically examine and make sure that the work that the builder is billing for has been done and completed. Carrie, what do our inspections run for those draw inspections usually?
About $150, $175.
And then there's also usually with these projects a final inspection in which the appraiser comes back and certifies that all work has been completed. And what does that run us?
About the same price.
About the same. So, you know, depending on the length of your project, you want to be sure that you have budgeted for these draws because they're not inexpensive. $150, $175 each. At the end of a project, typically you're going to hold back about 10% of the project cost so your builder can complete all of the, you know, the dozen or two dozen little things that haven't gotten done along the way. Builders call this the punch list. I used to hate the punch list because, you know, you'd have to get a plumber back over there to tighten up a faucet that he didn't quite tighten up the first time, and the plumber doesn't want to go in there because he ain't going to get paid to go tighten that faucet. He's already, you know, done his work, and he doesn't like to come back. Punch lists are not much fun, but, again, you need to maintain some leverage over the process by having a final holdback for your project until the builder completes his punch list. So things to realize when you're doing repairs, renovations, and additions. This is important. I find that this is a mistaken idea that people think that every penny they put into their home to fix it up is going to return as much value as you put in. When we get off of the next break, we're going to talk about this doesn't happen, why it doesn't happen, what you do about it, how you manage it. Grab that second cup of coffee and join us on the other side. Thanks for joining us this morning. We're talking about renovation, repair, and addition financing, and then we're going to tackle the big one, construction financing, in the next half hour. Before we leave the subject of repairs and renovations and additions, I want to talk about some misconceptions that people have out there, and that biggest one is that most people expect that when they put money into their home, they're going to automatically get that money back out in value. And I always hate to be the bearer of the bad tidings on these things because it's terribly disappointing when someone has spent $8,000 or $10,000 on a roof or maybe $6,000 or $8,000 on a new heating and air system, and they find out it didn't really add much value at all. There's a reason for that, and the reason is kind of tied into the marketplace. And the reason, what an appraiser has to do when he appraises a house, is he is effectively required to state in the appraisal whether everything in the house is in working order and livable condition. An appraiser has a term for that. Carrie, what's the term for a house that is livable and doesn't need any repairs?
It has no functional obsolescence.
That's right. Functional obsolescence. That's a big word that we throw around. If there is functional obsolescence, the appraiser must note that, and that must be fixed before we can close a loan. And this happens, what, maybe 20, 30% of the loans we
do? Sure,
yeah. We pick up something. Now, functional obsolescence is a little bit of a subjective judgment. And I always use the example of, okay, you've got vinyl flooring in your kitchen, and over in the corner there's a tear. in the vinyl flooring. To one appraiser, that may represent functional obsolescence. It looks bad. You walk in, you see it, and somebody's going to say, I don't like that. I'm not going to buy this house because the floor is not fixed up. Another appraiser might say, well, you know, it's over there in the corner. I don't really see it that much, and it's okay. So this is not, again, functional obsolescence and defining it is not always cut and dry. Another example is chipped paint. At what point is chipped paint just chipped paint? And at what time does it become functional obsolescence where it would interfere with the marketability of the house or might lead to deterioration in the house? Well, you know, two appraisers look at a partially chipped board and one of them might say, yeah, I see the chipped paint, but it's okay. The other might say, man, this thing's going to lead to some damage. I've got to make note of this and it needs to be repaired.
And in the case of chipped paint, it really matters, too, when your house was built. If it was before 1978, I think it was, it could have had lead-based paint. So if your house is older, they're going to require any chipped paint to be scraped and repainted, no matter if it's, you know, visible.
Right,
to the
because of the lead,
the
potential that there's
right.
lead-based paint under there exposed that is a hazard.
Right.
So I mentioned functional obsolescence because there is the expectation when a house is put on the market to sell. And an appraiser, that's what, when he's giving you a value, he is basically stating, if this house were for sale on the market today, this is what it would bring. When he's making that statement and he is coming to a value, what he is saying is that this house is livable, it is functional, it is not in need of major repair. So there is an underlying expectation of the marketplace that a house should be in this condition. Well, if your roof is not in the condition in which there's no functional obsolescence, if it's in a state of disrepair, what happens is the market discounts your value. And fixing the roof simply brings it up to its market value. So you may have spent $10,000, but what you spent that $10,000 for was to get your value up to the market value. You don't get extra market value of $10,000 because you have a new roof. And this applies to quite a number of items that you might repair. And I will say that most repair items, if they're truly repairs, do not represent an increase in value just because you fixed them. And that can be a big disappointment. But I also encourage people to realize that their homes are an asset that needs ongoing maintenance. And these maintenance and repair items are simply your investment in your home that keep it in a livable state. It's part of the cost of owning a home, and you need to look at it as that and not as a way to add value by simply repairing your home. Then there are some projects that might return partial value. You have added something of value to your home, but then you know what? It may not translate to an increase in value that is equal to the money you put into it. The single biggest item, Carrie, that doesn't return the value for what you put into it, what would that be?
A swimming pool.
A swimming pool. And you know what? Every mortgage guy ought to get his own mortgage occasionally, as I did. I decided that I was going to. And then you find out all the reasons everybody gets all mad about everything. And I found this out myself. I added a pool to my house. I added a bunch of landscaping, a lot of nice, you know, pool deck and all this stuff. And I spent like $35,000 for all of that landscaping. Fence, you know, fence goes along with a pool and a pool. And I got my appraisal back, and it had added $7,000 of value.
Oh, my.
To my home. So I was, you know, like everybody else, mad at the world, mad at the appraiser. He doesn't know what he's talking about. But indeed, he does know what he's talking about. And the truth is, the market will not give you $35,000 for a $35,000 pool. They'll give you about seven. And you just have to keep this in mind. Now, whether you and that should not always keep you from doing the renovations or the repairs or the additions that you want. What you need to look at it is over the long term. I don't suggest adding a pool to your house if you're going to sell it next year. But, you know, my pool's now been in place 15 years. It has seen teenage children through. It's now populated by grandchildren, and I wouldn't give anything for the joy of having my kids and their friends over and my grandchildren now and their friends over to swim in my swimming pool. So was it worth the $35,000? Absolutely it was. I'd do it again in a heartbeat. But I had a long-term view of that. I've got the $35,000 I spent is now spread over 15 years, and I'm getting my money's worth. So that's how you need to look at some things that you'll do to your home. If you're going to be there long enough, you're going to enjoy it. Don't get all hung up about whether it adds value or not. In time, the general inflation value of the house is going to go up anyway, and you don't have to worry about it too much. Let's talk about, though, some projects that can return value. And Carrie, if we had to rank those, say, the top three projects that can return the highest percent of what you spend on them, what would you say those are?
Square footage additions, for sure.
That's the number one. Almost dollar for dollar, you're going to get that back. What's next?
Kitchens and then master bathrooms.
Those are the big focal points. You know, they always say that the first time you walk into a home, beyond just, you know, that it's functional and gives you the number of bedrooms and all that you want, the biggest thing that's going to drive your decision is the kitchen and the master bedroom. I think that's because the kitchen is kind of the emotional center of the home. I know it is in my home. I know I like to go home and cook. I don't know why. I guess it's just mindless to me. And after a day of working hard, I actually enjoy doing that. And I think I love it, though, because, you know, the boys come in and they sit down and they talk to me while I'm doing that. And so, you know, the kitchen's a big emotional center. If it's open and light and lively, then it's an appeal. So, yeah, you can upgrade a kitchen and usually get most of what you put into it out of that. And then master bathrooms can tend to be the same thing. Okay, so the big three that do return value, square footage always, kitchens largely, master bathrooms, good portion. And then let's talk about those projects that tend to return the least value compared to what you paid to get them done. What would those be, Carrie?
Like we talked about, roofs. Mm-hmm. That's a big one.
Yeah.
Your heating and air system.
Yeah.
Flooring.
Yeah, flooring. Flooring's expensive.
I mean,
you know, especially hardwood and things like the tile is expensive, but it just isn't going to return what you put into it. And then fuchsia paint.
Yeah.
Right?
Specifically fuchsia.
Fuchsia. You don't want a fuchsia paint job because you're not likely to get the value back out. Yeah, painting is not always one of those things that can return value. It can help your marketability. I mean, obviously, a new painted wall looks clean and good, and that's great for marketing. But the cost of the paint itself, probably not going to get back. We're going to bite off a huge chunk in the last portion of our show here. And we're going to talk about real ground-up construction projects. By ground-up, I don't mean like hamburger ground-up. I mean from the ground up. I need to start with raw land, and I need a house built. How am I going to get this financed? These are true construction loans, and we want to cover them in detail. I'm going to say that construction loans represent the single highest risk category of lending. Why is that? What's the number one reason, Carrie, for our listeners? I bet they couldn't ever guess why the biggest single risk is a construction loan. What is it?
Well, it's the divorce rate.
The divorce rate. Can you believe it? And you know why? Because people will build a house to save their marriage. Let me give you a hint.
It doesn't work.
That don't work. It's about like having a baby to save a marriage. It only creates more stress.
Oh, yes.
And it only results so that the divorce rate doubles among people building homes. And when that happens, the construction lender can be left holding the bag. We'll see you after the break. We'll talk about construction loans.
Thanks for sticking with us. We are in the home stretch talking about construction loans this morning. Since they're so complex, don't forget, just give us a call anytime, 864-235-9596, and we'll be there for you.
We'll start with a phone conversation, but I have found that when it comes to construction financing, a face-to-face meeting is a great thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
It is quite different from a purchase loan. It involves a lot of parameters that you just need to be aware of so you're an informed consumer, an informed borrower, And that's probably best done eventually face-to-face. But we'll start with a phone conversation. We'll outline the scope of your project, and then we'll get down to details if you want to move it on that way. We were talking about how construction loans represent the single highest risk category of lending. And the number one reason for that is the divorce rate doubles for people who are building a home. I remember as a builder, you know, I would watch people. I convinced myself one day I'm going to write a book because everybody goes through the same stage. When the house is being framed up, it's happening fast, and it's, oh, you can see the changes every day, and you get so excited. I got my new house, and look at this. And then all of a sudden, everything begins to slow down because wiring and plumbing and heating and air ducts and all this, it takes a long time, and you don't see anything. You know, it's like, why aren't they working on my house? And in fact, a lot of work's being done, but it doesn't look like it. And then there was always the disillusionment phase. And that always hit about the time that the wife was sick and tired of picking out every paint color, every floor color, every wallpaper, everything. And she's just sick and tired of making all those decisions. And about the same time, the husband says, oh, my gosh, we're going to have to pay for this thing for the next 30 years. And he's going nuts. And so that's when the divorce rate skyrockets. And no place to take that anxiety except to take it out on the poor builder who is not at fault at all, or take it out on each other and get a divorce. So I guess that's why. There's also some other real good reasons that construction lending is a high-risk category. One of those is cost overruns. Cost overruns are almost endemic. I built in the decade of the 80s about 110 homes. I had one home that had no cost overruns, one out of 110.
Wow.
And the only reason we didn't have one there is the guy building the house was a physician in Charleston. He just never came up and looked at it. I finished the house by the time he got ready to look at it, so he didn't make any changes. But they're normally cost overruns, and if you don't have the savings to pay for the cost overruns, usually your construction loan is a maxed out loan and there's no funds available. Well, that brings everything to a screeching halt. You've got too many costs that you can't cover, and again, the project can fall apart on you. High risk for a lender. There's another risk, and that is builders who suddenly take a permanent vacation to Argentina with your last draw money. And we had this happen back in the 80s. We always used to say, watch out if your builder drives up to your job site in a new Mercedes, because probably his next move is to go to Argentina. That's not true, and most builders are going to be ethical. If they've been at it a while, they know how to do this. But there are occasions where the builders take off with the funds, which is another reason that banks don't let builders overdraw, so they don't end up paying for their Argentinian vacation. And again, it just adds to the risk category. And then the final and huge one is that there is absolutely no value to a partially finished home. Back in the crash, Carrie, I would drive around. I'm talking about the 07 crash. I would drive around. And I drove into Kilgore one day. It's a beautiful subdivision, just stately, estate-type homes in there. And a builder had started three homes in the beginning of the crash. And they were framed up, you know, right there on the lot. And those houses were abandoned, and they sat there year after year after year. I even thought to myself, well, I'm a builder. I could go in there and buy that thing and finish it up. Maybe I get a good deal here. And I would look at it, you know, that lumber had deteriorated, and you start looking at it and say, well, you know, I'm still in a bad market downturn. I don't know if I'll get that thing sold if I finish it. And so that's why there's really no value to a partially finished home. So when a construction project starts, you can be hung in the middle of trying to finish an expensive home in a market that has long since gone crash. And so all of these reasons, construction lending is high risk. Because of that, the lender is going to mediate their risk by increasing the qualifying requirements. So, Carrie, risk abatement is the story with construction lending. How is a lender going to mediate the risk? What are they going to require of a person who wants to build a home compared to a borrower who wants to buy a home?
Well, your minimum down payment is going to be at least 20%.
Yeah, there is no such thing as 95% financing on a construction loan. It does not exist. Don't ask for it. Don't expect it. It is not there. If you're going to build your own home on your own land and have your own construction loan, you will need 20% equity in the form of land value and cash in the deal. 20% down.
You're going to have 10% of reserves in case of overruns.
That's right. If your project is costing you $250,000 to build, you're going to need an extra $25,000 after you make that down payment, because this is going to cover your cost overruns. And, you know, interestingly enough, when I was a builder, the average cost overrun was about 9.3%, in that area. And that's just the nature of things. You get into it, you decide that you want to upgrade your cabinets, you want to upgrade this, you want to change this. Oh, I didn't know this wall was going to be here. My closet needs to be bigger. All of those things add up over time, and you will need reserves to cover those. How else do the lenders mediate the risk of a construction loan, Carrie?
You need to have at least a 700 credit score, but a lot of lenders prefer 720 plus.
That's right. You're just going to have a better credit profile. What else? How will they mediate the risk?
The bank actually certifies the builder. So they check their background and their references. They actually call the references.
They do. And they check the financial strength of the builder. The builders sometimes have to provide tax documents and financial asset statements so that the bank is assured that the builder is able to finish the project and won't walk off. And lastly, how do they mediate the risk?
They control the draws. They won't let the builder overdraw.
That's right. Again, that protects both of you. It protects the lender, but it's going to protect you too. Now, we get a lot of questions about construction loans, folks. Probably the most common question we get is, can I use the equity in my lot or my land as my down payment? Carrie, can we count the value of the land or the equity in the land as part of the borrower's 20%?
Absolutely.
Yes, we can. Good news. So that means you can pay your lot off and not worry about it. You don't lose that money. The value of that lot is going to be counted in as your down payment. People ask, well, can I finance land? If I want to buy the lot and the land into the construction loan, can that be done?
Yes, if you qualify for it.
Okay. And the qualification is this. If you're going to buy land and build a house, and let's say the cost of the land is $50,000, the cost of the house is $250,000, so you've got a project here of $300,000, as long as you've got 20% to put down, yes, you can put the land and the home all together into a construction project, into a construction loan. A common question, if I have a loan on my land or my lot, do I just keep that when I get a construction loan?
No, all of the existing liens must be retired by the construction loan.
That's exactly right, because a construction loan must be in a first mortgage lien position. So everything must be paid off, and it must be the only loan on the project as you go forward. Now, a construction loan represents additional costs compared to just buying a home. And again, I find that most people are not prepared for those extra costs. So let's just talk about what they are. First of all, the loan itself, because it is an interim loan, in other words, it functions to get you from nothing on your lot to getting a fully finished house on your lot, but it does that through an interim basis. You only pay interest on the money, and you only pay interest on the money as you draw it and use it. And the construction loan is not designed to be the permanent financing. So it is an interim type loan, and so there are expenses that once you have finished with the home, you now are going to need permanent financing. That can be provided one of several ways that we'll talk about. There's some other extra costs surrounding construction loan. Carrie, let's cover what some of those are. We mentioned them earlier with some other loan programs.
There's the draw inspection fees, so $150 to $175.
Exactly. And then there's a final inspection fee also with a construction project that the appraiser who originally appraised it off the drawings has to come back and state, yes, this house is finished, yes, it is in move-in condition, and yes, you can close the permanent loan. Boy, that can be a snag at the end too, Carrie. We run into that a lot, don't we?
Yeah.
People say, well, a house is finished, can't I close the loan? Well, it's a process. The appraiser has to go back out, certify it's finished. That has to go to the underwriter. Underwriter has to certify it. Then they turn it loose to the disclosure department. Then they turn it loose to the closing department. And, you know, really, once we have evidence of completion, we're usually 10 to 14 days out from closing.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to keep those time frames in mind. Other costs involved in a construction project versus buying a home is a permit. You have to have a permit to build
a
house.
That's
a
big
permit,
one.
Yeah, that's a charge by the county, or it's a charge by the city, depending on where your property is, and that's an extra cost. tap and meter fees. You've got to pay water tap fees. Now, that used to be $50 when I built. I think tap fees in Greenville County are now $1,250 to $1,500. They are way up there now. You got to remember, you buy a house and the tap meter was paid, fee was paid a long time ago. So it's just in the price of the house. But if you're building one, you're going to have tap fees, meter fees. You're going to have interest carrying charges. As you build the house, you're going to be paying interest on the money as you use it. And you don't have the benefit of living in the house.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have to carry your current housing expense plus carry the interest charges on the construction loan. You're going to have some architectural and engineering fees. You can't just build a house off the back of a napkin. So you're going to need somebody to provide those drawings. And sometimes, for instance, you have a wide span that you're supporting a lot of weight on. An engineer has to look and say, okay, this is going to need a beam of this strength and this size to do it. So you can have architectural engineering fees in a construction project that you don't have in a purchase. And then you have to carry a special kind of insurance when you're building a house called builder's risk. It's not insuring you against the builder. It's insuring the builder of the risk that materials might be stolen, that the house might burn down even when it's in construction phase. And so that is a fairly expensive insurance premium compared to homeowners. And you just have to budget for that in your project. These are the things we help you set up when we meet with you before you have your construction project. Really recommend, if you're looking at any of these things, renovations, additions, repairs, or a full construction project, give us a call, 864-235-9596. We'll step you through. We'll give you all the information so you can make informed decisions, and we'll make that project work. Thanks for joining us today. Look forward to meeting you again next week. Tune in at 7 o'clock Saturday morning.